And they run through our ass like shit through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
It's ridiculous that they do it. That was a huge colony. Well, we didn't miss it. You know, the typical rah, 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 zip, boom, bah, boo.
You don't cuss. You don't drink. So what are your vices?
I have been known to chew a bit of tobacco when I get a little tired or watching film.
Hey, I'm Coach O. I just love my Hummer. I have my Hummer. You need a Hummer? Tell them about it, JoJo.
They've won the biggest championship, and that's the championship of life.
Gas control. Everybody just do your job. You understand that?
Welcome in to the latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter. And I'm joined, as always, by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Vols on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, buddy, how the hell are you?
I'm doing good, Shane, and I know you are, too, because after this, we can finally stop talking about old Reverend Hugh Freeze. And why that is, Shane, of course, because the good Reverend, even though every SEC team, you know, wanted him on their staff, apparently, Florida State wanted him. I think the Dallas Cowboys wanted him, Shane, apparently, depending on who you listen to, but he ended up at Liberty. He's Liberty's head coach. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, free at last, free at last. Oh, we don't have to hear any more about the old Rev. Oh, he's up there at Liberty. We've all been liberated. We never have to hear his name until at least next year.
Well, Shane, I don't know if you caught his presser. He had a press conference there, introduced him at Liberty on Friday. And here's just the best part of this whole damn thing, Shane. If you missed it, this was one of the best lines from a presser I've ever heard. Here's old Reverend Freeze as he's introduced as Liberty's head coach.
Faith for me is believing in the Son of God, Jesus Christ, and then he is the only one I've ever met that can handle my junk. If you know somebody else that can do that, I'd love to meet him, but I haven't met that person yet, and he's the only one that can.
All right, Shane, so Hugh Freeze, he's on it, man. Only the, I can't believe he dropped this one. What about you?
Ain't nobody handle my junk, Mike, except Sarah down there in, Oh, and that girl on page 5, oh, she was a good one. But other than that, no one else can handle it.
Well, I mean, of all the things for him to say, that was the one he should have avoided. You know, you got to think he came prepared for this one, but maybe not. I guess he had to let that one slip.
Did he wink when he said it? I didn't even get to see it.
He did not wink, Shane, but I'm sure in the back of his mind he knew he was trolling us all with that one.
Oh, yeah. Well, hopefully he can just stick with Liberty. And like I said, I'm sure there's going to be a few clips coming out next season of some stupid stuff he said. But if he turns Liberty around, don't be surprised if he's back in the mix, Mike.
Until then, we say goodbye to Hugh Freeze.
See ya.
Here soon, Shane, we're going to be saying goodbye to Kyler Murray because we both got it wrong. That shouldn't surprise anybody. Our picks are not always that great, but we both thought Tua would win the Heisman despite, the betting odds being in favor of the Oklahoma quarterback. But Kyler Murray won the award over Tua. Thoughts on the Oklahoma quarterback winning the trophy?
Surprised and not surprised. I was surprised that Tua didn't get it because I honestly thought, just from all the talk that had happened this season about how great Tua is, I mean, he was already crowned the greatest college quarterback to ever play college football. It just feels like a bunch of these old-timers would have been like, you know what, I'm not going to wait and worry about this thing or lose it. I'm going to go ahead and send this vote in. I'm just kind of surprised that Kyler took it away at the end, mainly just because Tua had it wrapped up for so long. I just thought some of these early votes would have caught Kyler. And they said that he had second place votes or something like that. So
yeah, he got the most points for a runner-up in Heisman history, which is bizarre because it wasn't the closest race in Heisman history, so I don't know how in the hell that worked out, but here are my thoughts on this, Shane. I want to see if you agree or disagree, but I think these Heisman voters are always looking to basically knock down the favorite. And I think that goes all the way back to Peyton Manning. I hate to bring that up. But you look at guys like Andrew Luck. Like, I don't understand how he didn't win. I don't know how Tim Tebow, his senior year, didn't win, unless they just don't want to give it to a guy twice. But they gave it to Mark Ingram, who was not even the best running back in the SEC, and I would even argue not even the most talented running back on his team that year. Yeah. It just seems like there's always a favorite, and then if they have like a down game, I mean, forget the previous 12 where he looked like damn Superman, but we're going to knock those out because he had a bad game against Georgia. It just seems like they always want to dock those guys when no one brings up the fact that Kyler Murray, you know, he cost his team the Texas game that they lost. Last time I checked, Tua didn't cost Alabama the SEC championship.
Well, yeah. I mean, thank God Jalen came in and played like a hero, though, because then it would definitely have been that type of narrative, is that that Tua blew this game, because he was not on during the SEC championship. So I don't know, but just we've talked about this. I think it's stupid that they have these votes, especially this year. I mean, these guys are going to be playing each other, so you're going to see Tua, you're going to see Kyler on the field at the same, playing against each other. And I think then you make that vote if Kyler's the best or if Tua's the best. I just think I know they're doing it for money and they ain't got stuff to talk about on Saturday, but I just think they're missing an opportunity by not letting them finish out the bowl games and playoffs.
Do you think this provides any extra motivation to Alabama's defense, or do you think stuff like that's just kind of overblown?
Oh, I'm telling you right now. Oh, Papa Saban down there, he is using this like we're getting absolutely no respect. They think they're going to steamroll. You're about to go against the best quarterback in the country, the best player in the country. And, he's just firing them up. So I think that this will help Alabama, just so that they don't overlook Oklahoma, because a lot of people are predicting Bama to just, beat the brakes off these guys. But now they have a motivating factor, I think. And he's gonna let Tua just play. I really think that this is going to be a highlight reel come the game. When do they play? When's this game?
It'll be Saturday, December 29th in the Orange Bowl.
20 days. Good God. 20 days from today. So, yeah, they got 20 days to let this thing soak in.
Now, Shane, last thing on this topic. I thought this was, this could be a pointless stat, but I thought it was kind of interesting. Nick Saban, in his career, he's 1-for-4 all time when facing a Heisman Trophy winner the year the guy won it. And I can break that down here. Cam Newton in 2010, he lost to Cam Newton. Johnny Manziel, 2012, lost to Texas A&M. Charles Woodson, 1997, Michigan, lost to that team. 1999, lost to Wisconsin, that had Ron Dayne. And Saban's only win over a guy that won the Heisman that year was Oklahoma quarterback Jason White in 2003. I just thought that was kind of, you don't see many stats for Saban where he's like 1-4 because he's, I don't know if he's lost 4 games in 5-6 years now.
You have to dig deep, man, right? That's one of those, you got to file the report. Like, you got to get your numbers just right to make it sound good. So I wouldn't read too much into that. I mean, this is Nick Saban with the undefeated Alabama right now. So I don't think he's worried about who he's facing over there. I think he believes that he's got the best quarterback on his team. Mm-hmm. I did ask the question on our Reddit page. And of course you could always get on there at that SEC podcast, what they thought about the Heisman. And there were some really good points in there. And, a lot of people thought that Kyler deserved it. Mainly because without Kyler, Oklahoma is not Oklahoma. And without Tua, you could see Jalen came in and won the game. So, when you're looking at the most important player on that team, maybe Kyler is more of an MVP than Tua. What are your thoughts?
No, I'm just not buying it, Shane, because I'm looking at all the scores Alabama's put up. 51 Louisville, 57 Arkansas State, 62 Ole Miss, 45 A&M, 65 Arkansas, 58 Tennessee, 52 against Auburn. I mean, my God, Shane, it's almost like, And these are games where Tua's not even playing the second half. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know. I just, people need to put it in perspective what this guy's doing. He is, I understand why people look at Alabama and say this is like the best Alabama team of all time. I don't think it is, but I think Tua is so damn good that he makes it look that way. He makes the game look easy, and he's just taking them to another stratosphere.
I'm with you, man. Let me ask you one question about Tua. Is I heard something like he had surgery. Is that true?
Yeah, but according to Nick Saban, that's the thing that they said will hold him out for about 2 weeks, they think, and that was about a week ago. So.
Oh, okay. So he's, you know, that's something you got to think too. If he really was banged up, you know, during that last game or last few games, you know, because he was really moving slow.
Now I've spoken to medical professionals though, Shane, and they've told me the injury and the surgery that he's had, mm-hmm. they expect him to be out a month. So,
oh wow,
I don't know. Maybe these Alabama players get healthy quicker, but that's cutting it pretty close for that Oklahoma game. Be right at that deadline. So, that,
what kind of surgery is it, or was it?
I believe it was to his ankle, and it was not a serious procedure. Like I said, I've been told he should be. Well, I've actually been told he won't be 100%. If that's what it is, until the season's over.
Oh wow!
But he should be fine for to play through it. Basically, is what I was told after a month. So I don't know, Shane. We'll see. I mean, those Oklahoma players, I would certainly expect them to be. You know, I don't condone them trying to hurt him, but they're going to be hitting him, and they're going to be hitting him low if they get a chance. Because I think that's their only damn shot in this one.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, Shane. Enough of all that. Ready to go around the league?
Let's do it.
Now let's go around the league.
We haven't decided how we're going to play the guys, so, and I wouldn't tell you if I did. So, you know, I don't mind you asking a question, but I don't need to answer it.
No, I mean, I'll be whistling Rocky Top by the end of the week. All our play. I mean, it's just like, right? I mean, just hear it over and over, and you know, like every other or every third song, it'll roll through within the crowd noise that we play at practice, so you just you get used to it. And it's a catchy tune, right? I mean,
this game's gonna be a street fight. This game's gonna be a street fight. I mean, some of you guys don't know who Kimbo Slice is. Hopefully you do. And you go back to it, man, this isn't a sanctioned fight. This is a street fight. I mean, this is the SEC. So, man, it's time to put on the hard hat, lunch pail, let's get to work.
All right, Shane, starting in Auburn. I mean, my God, Shane, if it seems like every passing week this situation gets worse and worse, maybe not even by week, but day by day, Shane. And the latest news, their freshman running back, Asa Martin, transferring from the program. And no, normally that's not that big of a deal, a player leaving, although this was a touted recruit that they got over the likes of Alabama and Clemson and I think a few other, you know, big-time programs.
But why, Mike? Why did he transfer?
The reason apparently that he's leaving, the Auburn staff unknowingly played him in too many games. They were planning to redshirt him, but they put him on the field for a fifth game. And we know this because they reached out to his family after the fifth game and said, hey, here's the plan. We plan on redshirting him. And the family knows the damn redshirt rules better than the coaching staff, apparently, because they understood that he had been on the field for five games, and that means Asa Martin could not redshirt. So, my God, Shane, just when Auburn can't get to be any more of a joke at the moment, they do something stupid like this.
Think about all the games they could have used him, but they thought they didn't want to burn a red shirt. It's just a total joke. And I don't know. I mean, does Martin say this if he's getting dressed up, you know, and say, hey, coach, you know, I'm burning a red shirt if I go in there. This is game five. You know, it just makes me wonder just the communication on that sideline. And that's just, I don't know. That's just icing on the cake down there in Auburn right now, man.
Mm-hmm. And to add to that, Shane, there's a little bit more here with Auburn. Apparently, they were interested in hiring South Carolina running back coach Bobby Bentley, and that's the father mm-hmm. of Jake Bentley, a longtime high school coach there in South Carolina. And I think he has a little bit of coaching in Alabama as well. I don't know if it was at the collegiate or high school level. I'm not 100% sure. I think it might have been at high school level, but apparently he was offered the offensive coordinator position and declined it. So you're getting guys declining promotions. And then our boy Eli Dinkwitz, whatever his name is, their NC State offensive coordinator, apparently he was approached by Gus Malzahn and has also turned it down. And why that's interesting is because he coached under Gus Malzahn once before at Arkansas State. So, I mean, Gus can't give this thing to position coaches. He can't give it to people that have worked under him. Gosh, Shane, what do you make of this situation here for Auburn?
Can you just imagine during this bowl game when they take that camera and they look over there and there's just one coach on the sideline and it's Gus? It's like he's wearing a shirt that says Gus against the world, you know? Oh, man. It's just, I don't know. Does Gus stick around? I mean, does he really? He's making the money. I would think that the boosters are going to say, okay, let's just buy him out. I think that's going to have to happen. And I don't know if they're waiting until after signing day or something like that, because, I mean, the worst thing that Auburn could do at this point, I would think, is fire Gus right here before National Signing Day.
Well, Shane, there seems to be the plan at Auburn is, you know, let's not support this guy. Let's make it as hard as we can to where he'll either leave or he'll be bad enough that we can fire him. And that's obviously, you know, when you've got 13 other schools, you know, working their ass off to build a competitive program, it's obviously not going to work out well for anyone there. So, I mean, it's nonsensical. I mean, they're hurting the program, not only hurting Gus Malzahn. So, I don't know. I mean, if they maybe, let's say they beat the hell out of Purdue, which I'm not sitting here predicting they will, but if they did, maybe that gets this thing turned in the right direction. Maybe they finish fast here in recruiting. They do have a couple of elite prospects. We'll get into that in just a moment, committed, but I don't know. If they can hold on to those guys, if they can beat Purdue, maybe they turn this thing around, but it's like a boat that's taking on water at the moment.
Yeah, it is.
All right, Shane, so let's jump not necessarily to Athens, but the state of Georgia. I thought this was an interesting note. Jeff Collins, the Temple head coach, who obviously, you know, he's got roots in the SEC. He was formerly Florida's defensive coordinator under the shark fucker Jim McElwain. He was defensive coordinator at Mississippi State under Dan Mullen when Mississippi State rose to the number one ranking in the college football playoff poll, the first one ever. So this guy's a very well-respected defensive mind in the SEC. He actually worked with Nick Saban when he first got to Alabama. So this guy has got a hell of a reputation. He's taken over the Georgia Tech job, Shane. So they go from Paul Johnson, the triple option guy, to a defensive guy who's got a ton of passion. He's very enthusiastic. People are going to love this guy, and he's a hell of a recruiter too, Shane. And during his introductory press conference here, he made it known out here that he's not backing down for Georgia. He threw out some shots here at the Bulldogs. All right, Shane, so shots fired already. He doesn't specifically name Georgia, but it's pretty clear to me who he's talking about here. He's going to be able to sell academics that Georgia can't.
Oh, man, I love it. I love it, you know. Already taking shots at the big dog. I mean, that's what you do. You go to jail, you go up to the biggest, baddest guy, and you punch him right in the face. That's what I hear, you know. So yeah, it usually doesn't end well, but, you know, or the bully on the playground. I think that's what this was, you know. It's just, hey, I'm here. I'm picking on Georgia already. If you want to be smart, you'll come to Georgia Tech. If you want to be dumb, you'll go to Georgia. So I like it, and it just fuels this rivalry. So, and that game was horrible this year, and I was hoping that it'd be better, and there's been times in the past it has been. So maybe this coach can get them back on maybe not the same playing field, but at least make it a competitive ball game at the end of the year.
All right, Shane, let's jump to Oxford, where quite a bit of news here from Ole Miss. Reports out of Oxford are that Mike McIntyre, the former Colorado coach who was just dismissed, he has accepted the defensive coordinator position there at Ole Miss. I think it's just pending, school approval. And to my knowledge, it's not supposed to be, any kind of issue. I think they just kind of have to say that. And, apparently this guy's going to be making $1 million or more a year to coach the Ole Miss defense, which is, it's interesting, Shane, because from what I understand, he's got such a huge buyout at Colorado. The way they structured it, they have to foot the cost, but if another school comes along, it kind of takes the money. So basically like what Butch Jones is doing at Alabama right now, where Tennessee doesn't have to pay whatever Butch's salary is at Alabama. Same thing with McIntyre. Colorado won't have to foot whatever he's getting paid at Ole Miss. So he could have taken a reduced rate, essentially, and still made the same money. But from what I understand, Ole Miss is going to be paying him close to, if not over, $1 million a year. What are your thoughts on the Colorado coach coming down to Ole Miss?
So the Georgia coach takes the Colorado job. Colorado job guy comes to Ole Miss, right? Am I getting this right, the dynamics here?
Yes.
Okay. $1 million, I mean, that's a ton of money, especially coming from Ole Miss and Coach Luke being the least paid coach in the SEC now. Now I can call him that. But I don't know. I mean, the defense was horrible. So I don't know how great Colorado's defense was. I don't know if that was the problem or the reason that he got fired up there in Colorado to begin with. So I haven't done enough research on this cat just to but that's a lot of money. That's a lot of money for Ole Miss right now, and kind of surprises me. But if they could keep that offense at the same level it was last year, and they can improve the defense just a little bit more, they could have won more ball games for sure. They would have been in a bowl game easy.
Well, Shane, I'm kind of right there with you. I don't know a ton about Colorado's defense or, Mike McIntyre's background of what the hell he was doing up there with the defense. But I do have this thought, Shane. If Ole Miss is really going to pay this guy, around $1 million a year to coordinate the defense, I think that shows, a tremendous investment in Matt Luke. And I think it's the right move. If that's your guy, this must be a coach that they've targeted and thought, this is a guy that can come in here and get this job done. And instead of taking the damn Auburn approach, going half-assed or limiting what you can do, get your guy, get him in there before the early signing period. Now they can sell to recruits, hey, here's your guy. You can come meet this guy. If there's any hesitancy there, because they are in a state that is loaded with talent this year. And you got everyone from, Auburn, LSU, Alabama, Florida, thanks to Dan Mullen's connections to Mississippi. But you've got a ton of states trying to pick players out of Mississippi, and Mississippi State's doing a hell of a job too. So you really need to get your coaching staff in order. That's a long way of saying I think they're making a commitment to Matt Luke, and I think that's the right sign if that's what they truly are indeed.
Yeah, for sure. You don't know how long this contract was, do you?
No, none of the details are out at this point, but from what I understand, it's a multi-year deal. And
oh, okay.
Hell, if you get fired from Colorado and someone's going to pay you $1 million multi-year deal, I think you got to take it.
And that's what would suck for Coach Luke and Ole Miss is here they're coming off this bowl ban. So when they're out recruiting, they got all this negativity about the NCAA. And now that that's been lifted, you don't want to create more negativity that your coaches are short-timers, I like what you're saying. They're investing into the assistants. They're getting behind Coach Luke. And so he truly is on an even playing field when he goes out and tries to recruit these boys.
All right, Shane, last note on Ole Miss. This will be some additional help here for McIntyre. But defensive tackle Benito Jones has revealed that he will return to school next year. I believe he'll be a senior next year. And he's, Ole Miss's best interior defensive lineman, in my opinion. And, maybe aside from Breland Speaks, he's been their best defensive lineman the past 2 years. So Benito Jones, he came in as a touted guy and he's lived up to the hype. And I know that Ole Miss defense is not very good, but, you can still have outstanding individual defensive players and you know, the overall unit can struggle, and I think that's been the case for Ole Miss. So this is good news for Ole Miss, and I think you know, a really nice piece here for McIntyre to build around heading into 2019.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this guy, when he first came in, I mean, he was top 25 player. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a big recruit, 5-star, and you know, that's awesome. I mean, you know, the defense has got a new defensive coach, and now you've got somebody up front that maybe is a vocal leader for you and can help build that front. So that's big for Ole Miss, him sticking around for another year. Because didn't you think he could have went pro if he wanted to? You think somebody would have drafted him?
I do. I don't think he would have been a very high round pick. You know, I'm not really a good judge of, because I've not been studying the interior linemen around the nation that much, but I certainly think he would have been drafted. But I think if we've looked at a guy like Josh Allen for Kentucky, same scenario where, you know, he may have been drafted in the third or fourth or fifth round last year and comes back and puts on a hell of a year. Now they're talking about Josh Allen being a top 5 to top 10 pick. I mean, if those are two accurate statements, he just made himself a hell of a lot of money this year.
Yeah, for sure, man. Well, good for them.
All right, Chayton, how about this note quickly on Tennessee? Not a ton going on in Knoxville, but Marquell Osborne, defensive back. And I don't think he really ever fit what Jeremy Pruitt was trying to get done there, but he announced that he is transferring. And I believe he was an Under Armour All-American, so he came in with a lot of hype. I don't know that he really did much. I think he had 2 interceptions in the Kentucky game. But yeah, aside from that, I mean, I think – I don't know that he was in the doghouse. But like I said, I just don't think he fit what Jeremy Pruitt was wanting to do there. But, you know, we're starting to see more and more of this, particularly with these programs that are under first-year coaches, where I think the guys that kind of have realized they don't fit are kind of taking off.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't think this will be the only – defensive transfer we have leave Tennessee this year. But, you know, Osborne was a good fill-in, wasn't a starter, you know, but, you know, when he did come in, he did some productive things. So, you know, anytime you lose some depth, you know, you always raise your eyebrow a little bit. But it doesn't – hey, I'll tell you this, Mike, it ain't all doom and gloom in Tennessee. You know, we've got an OC.
Let me ask you this, Shane. How many guys can they afford to miss or you know, transfer to where it really affects next year? Do you I mean, just a ballpark number. I mean, how many do you think Jeremy Pruitt can realistically lose?
Well, I don't think you could realistically. I don't think you should lose any of them, just mm-hmm. being honest with you. I mean, you saw what we did last year. We were extremely young back there. And there was a lot of shuffling of personnel, you know, trying to find what fits. And this may have been, like you said, a situation where Osborne just didn't fit in the mold or the situation. And, you know, he's wanting to showcase his talent. He wants to go to the next level, I'm sure. So I don't think you can afford to lose. It'd be one thing if you were just a dominant defense, you know, if you were like Bama or Georgia right now, and you could probably – handle losing 3 or 4 of these guys. But Tennessee's in a different situation. I mean, there's a huge drop off from the 1s to 2s. So even though we're getting some recruits coming in, I mean, these kids are going to be young. They're still going to be a year or two away from stepping up. I mean, it's rare that you can have a freshman. And we did have some freshmen step up this year. But, I mean, it is extremely rare that they can come on the field and be as productive. So, you know, these older classmen, you definitely – it does show, I think, if you lose them.
Now, Shane, you teased the offensive coordinator story there. I think there was a story that caught your eye this weekend that you demanded that we discuss here on the podcast.
Yes, the dumbest article I've ever seen. Yes.
Can you break it down? Because I agree. I glanced at it, Shane, and it just hurt my head. I couldn't make much of it.
The way I understood this, and like I said, I read about 2 paragraphs this thing, and I stopped reading it because it says Tennessee now has its offensive coordinator. Well, then when you read it, it was talking about Doug Matthews, used to be at Tennessee as a coach, I believe, and he came out and he said that Tennessee is 95% sure they know who their offensive coordinator is, and he will be hired, but they're not going to announce it till after signing day because they didn't want to disrupt anything or something like that along those lines. So, and I'm thinking, okay, if that was the truth, if that was the fact, why in the hell would we wait to announce it? I think it would, you know, it would get people off Pruitt. It would get all these coaches that are negatively recruiting that we don't have an offensive coordinator. You know, what advantage do they have unless it is going to disrupt something in the coaching staff? My one concern is, and I don't know if this is true or not, but there was a lot of talk about Briles possibly coming in with his lineman coach. And, well, we don't have room for a lineman coach because Coach Friend is on the staff. And, you know, so if you hire this cat and then you fire Coach Field or Coach Friend, I'm just saying hypothetically, how close is he to some of these recruits we're trying to land here in the next week or two? So that's the only reason I would see that they wouldn't hire one. But even then, Coach Fran would know if this kid, if Briles is in there and he's got his line coach with him.
Mm-hmm. What about this, Shane? Any chance that maybe they're going to hire someone from the NFL and they don't want to, you know, say a Browns offensive coordinator named Freddie Kitchens, and they don't want to be like, you know, Browns are kind of making a run here. I don't know that you can really announce that he's leaving 3 weeks before the season ends, that he's coming to Tennessee. Did that cross your mind at all?
No, because, I mean, that's part of the business. I mean, we were just talking last week. I was watching the Pittsburgh Charger game, and the coordinator there was going for an interview. What's his name? Is it Schottenheimer?
Wisenhunt there?
No, Wisenhunt, yes. I think I said that last time, too.
You did?
But, you know, I mean, the announcers were the one talking about it. Like, oh yeah, he's got an interview next week. He's going to go down there. And he didn't take the job, you know? So surely, that these coordinators and especially Cleveland, I mean, Cleveland's got an interim head coach. We don't know what's going to happen at the end of the season. So I wouldn't be surprised if a coordinator was shopping around and if he took the job, that's great. I just don't think he's going to leave till the season's over, you know?
Well, that's interesting because I did see another article, Shane. I can't remember who wrote it, but it was Sunday afternoon they wrote it. And they said, according to our sources, Tennessee could offer the job to the next offensive coordinator Sunday night, but we don't know who that is. So it's like so they have half the story. That doesn't make any damn sense. So I just think everyone's just throwing shit against the wall here.
We don't have anything else to write about, Mike, you know? What about this? I heard a little talk about this, that they brought Briles in just so that they could ask questions about the UCF guy. You heard that? Is it his brother-in-law or something like that? They're like family members.
Yeah, that's my understanding, Shane. So I guess if you can't hire a guy because of his connection to Baylor, maybe you can hire someone he's related to that he may have told all the secrets. I don't know if this is one of the most bizarre, you know. I think anytime they meet with someone, it doesn't even necessarily mean they're going to, you know, get a job interview. They may just be spitballing ideas or spitballing, you know, who they should be looking at. So maybe something like that happened. I've even heard Nick Saban, you know, he'll interview someone for a job and I've heard the coaches leave and say, well, hell, he has no interest in hiring me. He wants to know what the hell someone else is doing so that he can beat him next year. So, I mean, you just never know with these guys what it is they're talking about. You know, if they are, in fact, meeting, I think a lot of that is put out there. And whether it's true or not, you just never know. I mean, according to some people, they met with Hugh Freeze and Hugh Freeze was ready to take the job about a week or two ago, you know, so...
Yeah.
Just take everything with a grain of salt. But I don't know, Shane. I'm about ready for this thing to end.
Hey, we're a basketball school now, Mike. You know, we just took down the number one Gonzaga. So, I think we've kind of cooled off in the OC talk for at least a day or two. But it won't be long. Twitter will be firing back up.
All right, Shane. Final bit of news that I've got here. I just wanted to hit on these real quick. But Missouri defensive tackle Terry Beckner and Kentucky outside linebacker. We touched on him earlier, Josh Allen. They have both announced that they plan to play in their bowl games. I know it's like a, you know, obviously it's a trend going around that players are going to plan on sit out their bowl games. Mm-hmm. And speaking of that, Will Grier, the West Virginia quarterback, who he actually finished fourth, Shane, in the Heisman voting. He's healthy, but he's sitting out the West Virginia bowl game. So now's a good time to go bet on Syracuse before the odds makers flip that one. But any thoughts on those players, you know, two of them staying and one of them sitting out?
Well, good for Terry. Good for Josh. I think really good for Josh with Kentucky. I mean, just so many seniors on that team and just close out that this great season that they've had. And Will Grier, you know, he could just go to hell. So I don't care where he sits. So
yeah, and think about it, Shane. If Kentucky were to win the Citrus Bowl over Penn State, win a New Year's Day Bowl, I mean, they'll win their 10th game. That's going to be a hell of a day for Kentucky football if they can get it done. I mean, they really need this guy to come through.
Yeah, for sure.
And, you know, also I'll tag on this note, Shane. Mark Stoops gave a press conference, I believe it was on Friday, and he was asked about Benny Snell. You know, Benny Snell's just a junior, but most people expect him to go for the NFL. And according to Mark Stoops, Benny Snell has, you know, put in his paperwork to essentially find out what round he'd get taken in from the NFL people, and just kind of weighing that information. At the moment, he has apparently not made a decision, and I think Benny Snell was even asked about it, and he just said, you know, he's completely focused on the game, and then after the game, he'll make his announcement. So that's the latest with Benny Snell.
That's crazy. Let's just say hypothetically he does come back. Do you know, and you probably don't, but how far away he is from the record, the SEC rushing record? I mean, because he's got to be close. He may be able to get it in another season.
I think with another season, Shane, I think he would come close. But he is not that close to getting it, I don't think, because I think it's around 5,600 yards.
Uh-huh.
And I think he's got, I want to say, like, 3,500 or something.
Yeah, Herschel got it. He's got 5,259. And yeah, like you said, he's got it. He did it in 80, 81, 82, 3 years. Unfucking believable.
Mm-hmm.
And then Nick Chubb was up there at 47. So let me scroll down here. He can't be too far down. Benny Snell's at 37.54. So he would have to have, you know, 1,500 yards. Mm-hmm. 1,600 yards. I mean, that's doable. I mean, it's definitely doable. So, I mean, could you imagine? Let's just say hypothetically he foregoes the draft because they're projecting him in the fourth or fifth round, right?
Mm-hmm.
Benny has a chance to come back and be the leading rusher in the SEC ever. I mean, that pretty much guarantees him a spot for the college, you know, what are they called? It's like the NFL where they have the Pro Bowls and they give you the gold jackets, what they call it.
The Hall of Fame?
Yeah, there's College Football Hall of Fame. I mean, if Benny comes back and comes close to that record or maybe breaks that record, hell, I mean, that may be guaranteeing him a spot in that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Not that that's a big deal now, but it will be later in life.
Well, Shane, that's a nice fantasy, but he's going to the NFL.
Yeah, you're probably right.
All right, Shane, let's hit on, you know, we haven't done a lot of this, but it's that time. Let's get into some recruiting news. What do you say?
Okay, brother, let's do it.
So let's start, Shane, with the SEC champion, obviously Alabama. Big news here. They flipped the number one safety in the nation, a guy by the name of Dax Hill. I believe he's from Texas. He was committed to Michigan. So Jim Harbaugh just keeps taking L's, Shane, ever since that damn Ohio State game. And then to add to that, Alabama added the number 11 cornerback in the nation, Jeffrey Carter. He's a flip from Texas A&M. And the joke going around, Shane, after this happened after Tua lost the Heisman was, you know, Alabama, Nick Saban's so damn mad they're just fucking taking it out on everyone on the recruiting trail.
Well, they did this like within a couple hours, right?
Dax Hill, it was leading up to the Heisman. It was before it. And then this other guy was like immediately after.
Now, what does this move this this Tide class up? Because I mean, that's some big time recruits.
Yeah, Shane, Alabama went from number one to a distant number one.
Oh, they were already at number one. Jeez.
Yeah.
Oh man, this team, they just keep winning. Nick keeps winning, you know.
And the SEC right now, Shane, they have the top four classes in the nation. I believe it's Alabama, Georgia, Texas A&M. And LSU is the fourth one. So,
who's now Jeffrey Carter's the one that was committed to A&M, right?
Correct. So, yeah, Jimbo's taking a little hit here at the hands of Alabama. I mean, and of course, we still, you know, the early signing period starts Wednesday, December 19th. So, there's still plenty of time to change minds. We could see some flip action there. And then, obviously, the traditional signing period, the first Wednesday in February, so I don't know if the specifics on all these guys. Some of them may wait till then, but I think we're going to see, like last year, about 80% of the guys probably sign early. So we got some decisions coming up in the next week and a half that are pretty big. And here's one, Shane. Marcus Banks, he's an elite defensive back. He was a former LSU commit. He's decommitted from them. He, from what I understand, is down to Texas A&M, Florida, and Alabama. He is set to make his decision January 5th. He just announced this. He's going to be in the Army All-American game. So the SEC is going to get another defensive back, and Marcus Banks, during that day. So that's going to be a big one. Another update here, Shane. On Sunday, Charles Cross, Mississippi offensive lineman, who is a U.S. Army All-American prospect and a top 100 overall recruit, he committed to Mississippi State. That's huge for Joe Moorhead. And why I like that one so much is that his commit alone jumped Mississippi State from the number 19 class all the way up to 16. They jumped Arkansas. Oh, wow. They jumped Ole Miss. And they jumped another team that was outside the SEC. I can't think of it at the moment. But, you know, obviously Mississippi State, they had some issues on offense, but they really need to get on. They got a good, really good quarterback committed. Now they need to get on some linemen and some skill players. And this is a type of player that you know, I think could come in and make a huge impact there at Mississippi State.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And then here's some other news, Shane. Here's from Georgia, Bill Norton, one of the best players from Tennessee. Jeremy Pruitt's been trying to flip him for a while. And he went on an official visit to Athens this week, and he's decided to shut down his recruitments, telling Tennessee to kind of stop trying to flip him. And I just saw this right before we jumped on the pod. Cade Mays celebrating that one, Shane. So
it's just did he really?
All around sad day for Tennessee. Oh, I mean, Nick's Kirby Smart here is just grabbing whoever the hell he wants out of Tennessee at the moment. And that, you know, that they've got another guy named Zion Logue, he actually lives not far down the street from me here in Nashville, Shane. I believe he's in Lebanon, but he has also shut down his recruitment. He's a Georgia commit that Tennessee was desperately trying to get on campus. They can't get either one of them. And Bill Norton was not alone on his trip to Athens there, Shane, because the number one running back in the nation, Trey Sanders, he was also in Athens this weekend. So, gosh, Georgia, known as running back U. And what's interesting there, Shane, that for a long time, Trey Sanders, that was believed to be a Florida-Alabama battle.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously Florida fans do not want to lose him to Alabama, but my God, it would be even worse if he went to damn Georgia. So, you know, Georgia, I consider them running back U of the SEC right now, if not the nation. And, hell, if they get this guy, Shane, I mean, it's just going to keep on going.
Oh, yeah, man. It's the rich get richer. That's what it feels like, Mike. And let me ask you, Tennessee's really been having a hard time keeping some of these Tennessee boys staying inside Tennessee. I was hoping that Pruitt would kind of change that narrative, but it doesn't seem to be working right now.
Well, yeah, and I wouldn't necessarily put that on Jeremy Pruitt. I think I would put that on the state of the football program. And I mean, I just think the reality is that a lot of high school students, whether they're from Tennessee or not, I think a lot of them don't want to play for Tennessee. I mean,
yeah.
Why would they? I mean, they've not really seen a whole lot of Tennessee being successful on a national stage. I mean, you had those two good years under Butch Jones, but aside from that, I mean, I think if you're, you know, 17, 18, 19 years old, I'd say basically your entire football watching life outside of two seasons has been pretty down for Tennessee. And so I think that it says more to that. And obviously Tennessee does have a top 20 recruiting class right now. And I think a lot of that goes to just how good of a coaches and recruiters Jeremy Pruitt and his staff are. So I think I think it all has a lot to do with that and all their relationships they had heading into this recruiting cycle. And, you know, if they start winning on the field, if they have a top, you know, I think there's a good chance they have a top 10 class, Shane. And if they can recruit top 10 talent to a 5-7,
right.
If they win 8 or 9, I mean, I think they could be looking at a top 5 class the following year. And they've already got the quarterback, and that's a lot of times that's the hardest thing to do is kind of you get that quarterback and he basically becomes your biggest recruiter and you recruit around him. So, and he's got 5-star teammates on his team, a couple 4-stars. So Tennessee's in a really good position, but I think it really comes down to they just got to, you know, we can't have any more of these missing bowls seasons, and they got to, you know, be more competitive in league play.
I got you. Now, do you know anything about this, and I'm terrible at names, N'Kobe Dean? I heard that he was down there at Ole Miss. Is there any, I think Georgia's the heavy favorite here to getting this guy, but is there any chance Ole Miss lands him?
Well, you know, that'll be interesting, Shane, because obviously what we just hit on, Ole Miss already got a defensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. I think they'll put on a new full court press for this guy, Shane, because historically, a lot of the elite players in Mississippi do not leave the state. So
yeah.
if he does go, it wouldn't be a complete shock because, like you said, Georgia and Alabama, and I think I know Texas A&M, and I think LSU, they're all after this guy. So
yeah.
this is a premier player in the nation. But like I said, it'll be really interesting to see. Now, it's got to be hard for Ole Miss to sell on the recruiting trail when they don't have a defensive coordinator. Now that they got that, hell, I mean, they do those in-home visits. I don't know if there's a cap on how many coaches could come, but I'd bring the entire staff to his house and just show him how much he means to you, you know?
Absolutely.
So look
Absolutely.
For something like that. Did, speaking of 5-star linebacker, Shane, Owen Popo, the Auburn commit, a lot of people thought Tennessee would get him flipped. He announced that basically he's 100% committed to Auburn. He's committed to, I guess he's a good swimmer from what I understand, Shane, and with a sinking ship, you know, you kind of have to be. But, you know.
Hey, we got lakes, you know. We got water. We got tons of pools.
No, I'm kidding about that, Shane. But it is interesting that he was firm in his commitment to Auburn. I think he's been a longtime commit of Auburn. But you got to think that just because I think this is one where Tennessee is not going to give up, but just certainly not trending in the right direction. They've got about a week and a half to change his mind, try to get him on campus. I believe Jeremy Pruitt is going to visit him shortly in the next week or so. So it would be really interesting to see. I mean, that's the thing about recruiting. I think that's why, you know, everyone kind of it's such a roller coaster because you're dealing with, you know, young men who their minds change, can change like the damn wind, Shane. So,
yeah,
I mean, we've seen that, you know, people committed for years on end. And then that last moment they flipped to another school. That happened with Patrick Surtain last year, who was committed to LSU for like 2 years, and then on the day of signing day, signed with Alabama. I mean, these things happen. So nothing is done in recruiting until they sign. So that's kind of why we even kind of wait to talk about it till this point, because so much can change in such a short period of time. But that's where things are trending. And speaking, you know, we were touching on Ole Miss here. I thought this was an interesting note, Shane. The Rebels got a commitment from a running back, in-state running back named Gerard Connor.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not, I wouldn't necessarily say an elite prospect, but why that's interesting to me, Shane, is because Ole Miss was perceived to be one of the only threats to Tennessee for Memphis running back Eric Gray. So the fact that Ole Miss picked up another running back, they have two running backs committed now, kind of lets you know they're out of the Eric Gray race, which you would think was a really good sign for Tennessee. Eric Gray, for those that don't know, he's a U.S. Army All-American, and he won back-to-back Mr. Tennessee awards. And from what I understand, he is going to be up for the Gatorade National Player of the Year. So he's an outstanding player. He scored over 120 touchdowns, over 8,000 rushing yards. Tennessee, he's been on Tennessee's campus a lot recently. A lot of people expecting him to eventually sign with Tennessee. But mm-hmm. he just made the trip to South Carolina, Shane. So the Gamecocks making that interesting, making a last-ditch effort there to try to get the Memphis running back. And South Carolina's got a couple Tennessee guys committed. I think they signed a couple in the last cycle, too. So they've started to really recruit the state, and they're doing a good job. That's going to be one to watch, Shane, because obviously Will Muschamp, Jeremy Pruitt, those guys are known to butt heads on the recruiting trail, and looks like they're going to do it again here for Eric Gray.
Okay. All right. I like it.
Oh, and one last note I have here, Shane. The number one receiver in the nation, Jadon Hazelwood, he visited Tennessee this weekend.
That's right.
I don't really know how interested he is. He was a former Georgia commit. He decommitted, I think it was about 2 months ago now. We hit on that at the time, but from what I understand, he's still considering Georgia. He's also considering Miami and I believe Florida State and obviously Tennessee if he's visiting Tennessee. So that's going to be one to watch, Shane. I think Tennessee, of all those, probably need him the most, but yeah. I would imagine it's hard to land a number one player like that if you don't have a damn offensive coordinator, unless they've told him who it is or what exactly they're going to be running. But it's just that's like an unanswered question going into such a tough decision. I don't think that bodes well, obviously, for Tennessee.
Yeah, I think that's going to come down to, like you said, Georgia and Miami, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I believe Florida State is another one he's looking at. But they also do not have an offensive coordinator, so that's not helping.
It's a crazy time of year, though, Mike. You just never know. I mean, I don't know how much money we offered him while he was up here and what restaurants or clubs we took him to, but I hope it was good. Let me ask you real quick, before we get too far here. You know, Auburn's got a pretty nice little class built up here. I think they're 12th in the nation. And we've already touched on Owen, but do you think any of these other guys like George Pickens or Bo Nix or Jaron Handy, do you think any chance that they get, I don't know, scooped up here at the end of this? It just feels like there's just so much going wrong at the University of Auburn right now that I'm really surprised that they've kept this class together. Mm-hmm. I think it's one of those situations when one goes, then we may see three or four. Is there any names that you're looking at on Auburn's commit list that maybe goes to a different school?
Yeah, I think the one name there is George Pickens, Shane. I think he is a serious contender to flip to Alabama. I know they covet him very much. I think they see him almost as in that Julio Jones mold is how I've been told. So I think they're kind of selling him on that. And okay. That's one to watch. Bo Nix, Shane, I think everyone in the nation would want him, but he is an Auburn legacy. He's firmly committed, and I think basically at this point they're telling him he's could be the quarterback next year. Whether it's Gus Malzahn or whoever is the coach down there, I think Bo Nix is going to have every opportunity, and I don't expect him to waver at all. And I think he actually just won the state title, so he's having a hell of a season there, Shane. And I think he's more than any of them is just ready to sign now.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, that's the one I'm really keeping an eye on. Just, not just Tennessee because I love Tennessee, but I'm so interested in what's going on in Auburn just because right now it's a train wreck and everything they do is wrong. And I'm just interested to see what happens on National Signing Day.
All right, Shay, final thing I've got here. I don't know if you, I sent you these links. I don't know if you had a chance to really dive into it, but I did two articles here for Saturday Down South. I graded every coordinator in the SEC, starting with the offensive coordinators. And then, of course, I did another article where I graded the defensive coordinators. And I just, paragraph length here on each coach. But I wanted to just read you just the grades I had for each one, and if any of them jumped out to you, just maybe we can talk about it and just do it that way.
Okay.
So starting with we'll go with the offensive coordinators, Mike Locksley for Alabama, I gave him an A. Arkansas's coordinator Joe Craddock, I gave him a D minus. Auburn coordinator Chip Lindsey, gave him a D. LSU Steve Ensminger, gave him a C plus. Ole Miss coordinator Phil Longo, gave him a B. Mississippi State Luke Getsy, I gave him a D. Texas A&M Darryl Dickey, I gave him a B. Florida co-coordinators Billy Gonzalez and John Hevesy, I gave them a B minus. Georgia coordinator Jim Chaney, gave him a B plus. Kentucky's Eddie Grand, gave him a B. Missouri's Derek Dooley, gave him a B as well. South Carolina coordinator Brian McClendon, C plus. Tennessee's Tyson Helton, gave him a D. And Vanderbilt Andy Ludwig, I gave him a C. Any of those maybe you take issue with or anything?
Is D the lowest you can go? I mean,
I thought about giving Helton an F, but
yeah,
I think he had, you know, a game or two there, and I think just what happened with Jarrett Garantano, I thought he really, you know, he didn't, not to say that he was like gangbusters, but he went from a complete question mark to, I think by the end of the year, if you're an idiot, if you don't say they have a quarterback to build around, I think those things are enough to elevate him.
I thought the McClendon was, I probably would have went a little bit higher just by the way he finished the season. I think he started out really bad, but he really came on toward the end of the season. I mean, South Carolina, say what you want, was humming there at the end. And if they would have been, I don't know, if they would have been playing offense like that from week one, we would have been talking about them more this year, I think.
Now, that is interesting, Shane. I didn't include it here because this is just something I heard recently. But so, you know, we mentioned Bobby Bentley for potential, you know, interest there at the Auburn offensive coordinator position.
Yeah.
The rumor I've heard was that a lot of what they were running at the end of the year were his plays. So, I don't know if that's true, but I'm just throwing it out there. If that's true, that maybe would explain a little bit of why they exploded. But, you know, I don't want to completely take away from Brian McClendon because, like I said, I don't know that that's a fact. But that piqued my interest when I heard that.
Yeah, I had no clue. I had no clue he was on the team. You know, Jake's dad's over there. That's pretty cool stuff right there. And I don't know how much that is true because who's the offensive or the quarterback coach on that team?
That would be a guy by the name of Dan Warner, who was the
Ole Miss
offensive coordinator.
That's who I thought. Like, if he was still in any plays from anybody, I thought it would come from Warner.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of surprised it's coming from Jake's dad there. But no, the other ones, I think you nailed it. I think Chip Lindsey may have been even. I don't think that's fair. I think you can give that grade to Gus just because he was filtering everything that came through.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, even Mike Locksley, you know, I think he really did have free reins to do whatever he wanted to do with that offense. And say what you want, they were extremely productive all season long. So I may even gave him an A+ because I thought he would be the reason that they would not make an SEC championship or a playoff game. And I was totally wrong because I guess if you have – I don't know if it has more to do with the talent that was on the team, but at least he did take the talent that was there and put him in the right spot.
All right, Shane, let's jump to the defensive coordinators. Here's my grades for all these guys. Alabama's Tosh Lapoy, I gave him a B.
Mm-hmm.
Arkansas's John Chavis, gave him a C. Auburn's Kevin Steele, gave him a C-. LSU's Dave Aranda, gave him an A. Ole Miss's Wesley McGriff, who's already been fired, gave him an F. There's you an F, Shane. Mississippi State's Bob Shupa, gave him an A+. Texas A&M's Mike Elko, gave him an A. Florida's Todd Grantham, gave him a B+. Georgia's Mel Tucker, gave him a B. He's obviously been hired there at Colorado. Kentucky's Matt House, A+. Missouri's Ryan Walters, B-. South Carolina, Travaris Robinson, gave him a C-. Tennessee's Kevin Scherer, gave him a C. And finally, Vanderbilt, Jason Tarver, C+.
Yeah, I mean, you pretty much nailed those. I don't know. Maybe Elko, I'd have brought him down just a little bit. I think he was very good. I think he was very good with what he had to work with. I think they dropped a couple of games mainly because of that defense. And I think that's the only one I would really adjust. And maybe bring up Todd Grantham just because on the opposite, there was a lot of games that Florida won that was just because of their defense and Todd putting them in good situation with the talent that he had down there. So maybe that's one I would adjust as well. I think you nailed the other ones, though, Matt and Shoot. I think those are great. Ryan did great. Try to see here. Maybe Kevin Scherer. How you say it? Scherer. I don't know how much of that is Kevin and how much that is Coach. Mm-hmm. You know, but I think maybe C minus. I maybe brought that one down just a little bit. And I thought Vanderbilt came on strong there at the end of the season. So I think you got a good spot with Jason. So yeah, I think you pretty much nailed this one.
All right, Shane. So that's all I've got on this episode. You got anything before we jump off here?
Yeah, buddy. Well, just remember, we're down to 3 days a week, so we'll be airing on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're hanging out with us December 9th, you're a true SEC fan, and we love true SEC fans. And I appreciate everybody hanging out with us, and especially ones that went on iTunes and gave us a rating review. And I've got a couple reviews, Mike, I'd like to read.
All right, let's do it.
Thank you for being a friend. Travel down a road and back again. Your heart is true. You're a pal and a confidant.
All right. Our first one comes from Yee Doggy. It says, y'all know Georgia is where the talent is at. 5 stars. I moved from Atlanta to San Diego, and these two yahoos have been amazing. So entertaining and funny. They do a great job of clips and news from around the league. I'd hang out with these guys on Saturday night for sure. I'm not sure that they could keep up being that they are Tennessee homers. I love this daggone show. Well, Yee Doggy, I appreciate it, brother. That's from your neck of the woods. San Diego, I like going out there, man. Temperature is perfect every day. You remember that? One of the best weeks I ever had when we went out there.
I don't think we're allowed to go back to that hotel, Shane.
You're probably right. Oh, yeah. Okay, moving forward. Ryan Reed, 5. 5-star review. Says, great podcast. Best place to find out about the SEC news. Go Vols. All right, brother. Well, I appreciate you, Ryan. I appreciate all the listeners. And that's all I got, Mike.
All right, Shane. I guess that'll do it. Thank you for joining me. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We'll catch you on the next one.
All right. See you guys. Go Vols.